Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. We've got a special hurricane update for you. It seems like we've got that going on quite a bit this time of year. And we've got Hurricane Michael about to make landfall. As we speak, we're recording this Wednesday afternoon, Eastern time. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. Before we get to that, though, we got to get with my co-host, Sam Bradley. And Sam, you've been in touch with some of our regular guests who are currently deployed for this particular thing.
Yes, as usual, Dr. Joe's back out and also Dr. Ben Abo. So hopefully we'll hear from them soon on their adventures. And it's freezing here in Colorado, which is a little weird for this time in October, but that's not as important as what's happening in Florida and parts nearby. But we've captured our best meteorologist in the world, Kyle Nelson, and I think he can update us on that. We're about ready to make landfall on that, eh, Kyle?
Yeah, Sam, absolutely. So Hurricane Michael, now a strong or high-end Category 4 hurricane with sustained winds right around 150, 140 miles an hour as of the most recent flights by the Hurricane Hunter aircraft. And it's taking pretty much a direct aim right to make landfall just east of Panama City, right near Tyndall Air Force Base, down in that area. And the impacts are already being felt very, very widely along the Florida coast there in the Gulf. Personal and as well as National Weather Service weather stations reporting wind gusts anywhere from 80 to over 100 miles per hour already, and tide gauges and those types of equipment along the shoreline already showing waves and you know, tide heights approaching at least 5 feet now above mean sea level, and that's only expected to rise. The National Hurricane Center, with their surge modeling, is predicting anywhere between 9 to 14 feet of inundation along the coast in the Florida Panhandle in that area. And of course, we cannot ignore the significant wind threat with this. Now, it has continued to intensify very, very rapidly, even right up to the point of landfall, and winds, sustained winds within that hurricane, 140 miles an hour, and wind gusts already over 100. There's going to be widespread damage, and this will be, and to quote the National Weather Service in Tallahassee, an unprecedented event here for the Florida Panhandle.
Yeah, Kyle, I was hearing that I think this area has not been hit by a Cat 4, as well as nothing like this has occurred in October. Can you speak to that?
Yes, I believe this is the one of the first Cat 4s to actually make landfall in the U.S. in October. And, of course, this part of Florida actually has not been hit by a landfalling Cat 4. Additionally to that, kind of thinking on the structural side, thinking of our friend Dan Zahner and those folks there in Neary, in Florida, I've seen some discussion that part in the panhandle actually has some lower requirements for us being engineered and structures being engineered against sustained wind speeds, as opposed to down on the, towards the southern end of Florida out there, where they're engineered against more higher wind speeds due to the higher likelihood of them occurring in that area. So it's going to be widespread damage both from flooding and from high sustained winds. And it's not just the storm surge along the coast, but the inland rainfall will be absolutely torrential as well. But thankfully, the current forecast is that the storm will continue, once it makes landfall, continue moving fairly quickly off to the north and east. However, that brings up another very, very important point, is that our friends in the Carolinas who are still reeling from all their flooding that's been ongoing here this late summer and early fall, we're now seeing the remnants of Michael are going to track right over the Carolinas, almost directly over them. So it's going to be a very, very powerful 1-2 punch for those folks, and our thoughts go out to them.
And absolutely.
And I saw a briefing recently with the FEMA director who made a comment that there's some of those rivers still have not drained all the water from Florence. So they're not flooded, but they're still at high levels. So the additional, what they're saying might be 8 to 10 inches of rain could cause them to flood all over again.
Good grief. Yeah, Dan sent me some intel early this morning, so I know he's on top of things. I'm sure we'll be catching up with him later to see how things fared in the world of buildings falling down. And actually, Kyle, that was another question. It looks like it is going to track north and then east. Other than the Carolinas, what other areas will be affected by it?
Well, Sam, that's kind of a relative term, affected. There will be the effects of Michael, Hurricane Michael, and the remnants of it will be felt pretty much all the way up the East Coast, definitely into Delaware, and probably even up to Long Island as this storm makes its way up the coast. There are actually tropical storm warnings that extend now from Georgia all the way up through to the North Carolina-Virginia border along the eastern seaboard because of the high winds and storm surge that are still going to occur now on the eastern part of the southeast part of the U.S. along that coastline, even though landfall was made or soon will be made, I should say, here on the Gulf Coast. So the effects of Hurricane Michael will be felt far and wide, definitely even, I would say, into Tennessee, Kentucky, and the Virginias as well, because the rain bands, the footprint of this storm is so massive as it draws in all that moisture off the Gulf and continues to intensify. It's going to dump its rain over a very widespread area of the southeast U.S.
And go ahead, Jimmy.
I was going to say, and I noticed that it's going to maintain hurricane force winds well inland, so parts of southern Georgia who are inland far enough to think they'd never experience a hurricane force wind gusts are going to be experiencing Category 1 hurricane force winds over places like Macon, Georgia.
Right, and that's why we're seeing the National Hurricane Center actually issuing those hurricane warnings for inland areas. So it's not just a coastal product per se, but if those conditions are expected to be felt far inland, then the agencies will issue those products as appropriate to let folks know what the hazards are to be expected in their communities, but also to give local authorities the best picture possible as to what impacts will likely be felt in their jurisdictions and areas of responsibility so that they can prepare their staff and their citizens to take those final preparations now as Hurricane Michael looks to make landfall here this afternoon.
Yeah, and it sounds like, of course, they were talking to some of the local politicians who are concerned with the fact that, it kind of takes me back to Katrina, that some people didn't leave because, oh, gee, we've been through this before. But like Katrina, this is not a storm like others that have been there in the past. And they stress the fact that they're going to be on their own for a couple days, because with trees down and everything else that happens in flooding, the 911 system will be very limited and unable to reach you. So that's a concern. I hope people are taking that seriously.
Can we talk a little bit about the unique geography that's in play here, Kyle? Because of where the storm is coming in and that front leading right edge that is where a lot of the storm surge happens, is really being forced into an area that geographically is intensifying the effects. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. And this is kind of that nightmare scenario for any type of coastal area that kind of is kind of curved or kind of bowled in shape. And what Jamie's referring to, that right front quadrant of these hurricanes, that's typically where not only do we see the greatest threat for tornadoes and things, but we also see that that's where the strongest winds are often found. And so think of you have the speed not just of the winds being generated by the storm, but also you add in the movement of the storm, the forward motion as well. And so think about, if you hold your hand out the window of the car, you have the motion of the car. But if you then took and threw like a baseball or some object forward, you'd have the speed of the car plus as fast as you could fling that ball or that object forward. So it actually ends up moving faster than the vehicle itself. So that's why those right front quadrants are so dangerous. And what that's doing is it's actually driving All that water and it creating a very, very incredible storm surge, 9 to 14 feet of inundation expected in the Panama City area and that coastline part of Florida, where you have not just the wind-driven water being pushed up just from the general motion of the storm, but now that wind driving it inland as well, plus with the tide cycle being played into this. And now you are taking all this water instead of pushing it up along, say, like a linear coastline along just a very broad edge where it can kind of hit that shoreline and slowly spread out. Geography is working against folks in this area, where it's all pooling up into an area along the coast where the water has no place to go but inland. And so that's why we're expecting to see incredible storm surge and very, very great devastation along the coastline, because this water is being pushed inland. And just like we saw in the Carolinas now, we have the surge pushing water up into the rivers and the bays and things near the coastline, and all this freshwater inland flooding from the rainfall, these outer rain bands trying to now drain towards the coast. And what's caught in the middle? Well, infrastructure, our citizens, and our responders. So as Jamie said, if folks did not evacuate or heed those alerts and warnings from their local authorities, they're going to be on their own for quite a while.
Wow. And a big shout out to all those meteorologists who were out there in the thick of it. Of course, I think they enjoyed that just a bit. But, you know, it's got to be a little scary when things get dicey as this thing hits. So, you know, I hope they stay safe out there as well. I recently, during the last storm, I know that there was a photographer that ended up floating away and getting caught in it. And I think he saved his camera, which is a good thing. So what else, Kyle, is out there? Are there still some potential hurricanes brewing or what?
Well, Sam, currently in the Atlantic, you have Hurricane Leslie and Tropical Storm Nadine well east of the United States, not expected to be a threat at this time. As we shift a little bit now to the west, looking into the northern Pacific, what is now Tropical Storm Sergio is expected to remain a tropical storm, but that's now moving up to the north and east and looks to, by the end of this week that we're in right now, to impact the Baja Peninsula, as well as head, and the remnants will move into the southwestern United States, so New Mexico and Texas area, bringing some moisture and perhaps some inland flooding into those areas as well. And that's what we can definitely look for there. But looking now kind of globally, there's two absolutely massive storm systems, two massive tropical systems set to impact areas in India and in those regions. And there's been lots of talk around there, because not only do you have, you know, these massive systems, but now all the rainfall that's already occurred with monsoon season over there. And so definitely a global perspective, a global max kind of peaking now with our hurricanes and tropical systems looking worldwide.
Oh, good grief. Well, we got Dr. Joe out there in the field again, and Dr. Ben Abo, and they're out, you know, fixing to rescue people in floods if necessary and whatever else needs to happen. So we wish them well and hope they stay safe. And hopefully, Jamie, you think we can maybe get a quick update from Joe tomorrow.
We're going to work on that. That's the plan. It'll all depend on how busy Joe is with the incident support team that he's with, and what they are running into. I some of the reports I've seen from, I've been covering the news, watching the news for this all day. They interviewed quite a few of the mayors and city managers and people of that nature. And most every one of them said that about 50% of the people in their coastal regions were staying and remaining in their homes despite the evacuation order. And that kind of concerns me, because when the evacuation order was first issued, people were expecting a Category 2, maybe a low Category 3 storm, and didn't expect it to intensify quite as much as it did. I saw several teams of reporters and meteorologists that were planning on staying closer to the coast move inland because they didn't deem the hotel or the place they were going to be staging to be safe enough to remain on the coast. And so I really am concerned that responders are going to have a long haul here to get people out. once the storm clears. And so we'll see if Joe's available on Thursday evening to catch up with us for a quick update. If he is, we'll try to get him on and do something where we can catch up with him and get an update out to the rest of you, because we want the disaster podcast community to kind of get that update as quickly as possible and hear what's going on. So and I know Kyle will be checking in with us as well as Becky if there's anything that we need to follow from a meteorological standpoint. You guys got big words over there in meteorology.
They have a class in that, I think. Big words and terminology.
Yeah. Yeah, we have our own list of terms, and then now you throw the medical field on top of it and all the complexities there, and let's not even get into dispatch and first response in general. So plain language and just being able to interoperate, and that, of course, is a huge advantage, especially when you have local, state, and federal responders all coming together to achieve a more positive outcome, because we're really there for the communities and for the citizens in them and to help them respond more effectively and begin that recovery process. And so if we can start talking that same language and I hate the phrase dumb it down, make it relatable, right?
Yeah,
drop the 10 codes, make it relatable, and let's all kind of interoperate, come together, because we do this for the people.
And our dispatchers are going to be dealing with a lot, because most of these places are locked down as far as response until the hurricane passes. But those dispatchers are still going to be taking calls as they can in the 911 centers and telling people they're just going to have to wait. And, you know, Kyle, I appreciate that that's got to be a difficult conversation to have with somebody who's, you know, armpit deep in water or worse.
Absolutely. And we've, in the course of our training, listened to those, the tapes from past, you know, landfalling tropical systems. And it just absolutely pulls at your heartstrings. There's actually, some great recordings and some great stories that were shared at the North Carolina, I believe it was their APCO conference there. And there was a few folks there that were telling and sharing their stories from Hurricane Matthew as 911 telecommunicators and playing back some of the recordings. And they were very, very hard to listen to.
And we were able to break away and get a quick update with Dr. Joe Holly to add into this episode. So we're going to cut away from our discussion with Kyle here at the end of that segment and add in a quick segment here with Joe. And here it is. And we are back with a quick update from Dr. Joe Holly, who has been deployed with the IST and is out there getting ready to respond to the aftermath of Hurricane Michael. And we got Sam Bradley here with us as well. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. I'm hunkering down and staying warm, and we want to jump right to Joe and find out what's going on, as they're probably gathering intel on what's going to happen when the storm passes through. Hi, Joe.
Well, hi, guys. It's good to talk to you. So just to make one minor correction, I'm actually out this time with my task force as opposed
cool.
to IST this time. Yeah, so it's nice to be back with my regular guys. And we had a doc shortage on the task force level, and IST was covered. So I came out with the task force this time. So we're currently in staging with a few other task forces a couple hours north and west of the impact zone, and kind of prepping with an expectation that we will be moving into that area, Mobile area, or, you know, depending on where things hit and where the damage is, probably early tomorrow morning. So it's a little bit of the prep. Final prep phase and make sure we've got all our stuff together and everybody's ready to roll, and we'll get busy.
You might actually have to get wet this time, huh?
I'll get wetter than I did last time. I expect. I certainly had my opportunity to work with a lot of different task forces at the ISC level last time and enjoyed that. But it's definitely kind of fun to get back with the guys that, you know, you've been together with for many, many years, and sort of see how things work at this level. I think it makes me better at the ISC if I see it from the task force perspective and realize, you know, I sure would wish I had done that, or I wish somebody would send me this piece of information so I could, I could be better when I go back on the ISP again.
Well, you know, I saw on Facebook that Dr. Ben Abo is out there too, so maybe you'll run into him at some point. Not sure where.
Yeah,
he
as a matter Justin Fairless is on a cot just a couple of feet away from me.
Oh, great!
And he's out with the Texas guys, and Dr. Jeff Beeson, that I think we've had on before as well, is also out with the Texas guys. So. It's kind of old home week. It's great to catch up with those guys and spend a little time with them as well. So we're all prepping final preps on caches and making sure all our equipment's working and you know, little issues on the trucks that you know, we beat up on them getting down here to make sure they're all set to go, et cetera. So that's what today is all about. It's preparation day.
Yeah, an interesting factoid that you may or may not have heard. I was on in our Facebook group, and Kyle posted something on the storm saying it has exceeded 155 miles an hour. 156 makes it a Cat 5, so it may in fact actually be called a Cat 5. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's that's what they're recording as we speak. This thing is making landfall. So, what do you anticipate, Joe? How much can you anticipate at this point?
Well, you know, certainly the storm is intensifying very quickly, and it is a large storm, just, you know, the amount of territory that it covers. So I expect that, you know, the damage is likely to be pretty significant. Certainly the area it's coming through has not seen a major hurricane in quite a while, which means there's lots of, you know, trees to be toppled and things like that that, you know, just haven't been taken down from past storms. I expect from a search and rescue standpoint, what we'll be doing, we're intentionally sort of stationed on the northwest corner of the impact zone, knowing that that tends to be the least impacted area as far as rain and, you know, thunderstorms and all tornadoes, all that sort of stuff. And what that does is allow us to get mobile much more quickly and sort of drop in behind the storm. So we'll head south and then east tomorrow morning early as the storm moves on inland and begin working our way, you know, along its path. I expect that resources from Florida, Ben Abo and all the guys in the Florida task forces will probably be doing the same thing from the other side as they work into the panhandle and you know, we'll look to sort of meet in the middle, as it were, and then begin moving north up through, you know, Alabama, Georgia, as it comes inland. And that'll pretty much be the approach. We're already seeing lots and lots of rain today. It's the wind is not too bad, but definitely getting a lot of rain here already. So it's you can tell the outer bands are upon us.
Wow. You expect the flooding to be about the same as the last storm or worse, or do you have any idea?
Well, I don't know that I have the answer to that. You know, I think certainly the size of the storm is pretty substantial, meaning the amount of rainfall will also be pretty substantial. I think this storm tends to be moving more so than certainly more than Harvey did last year. And actually a bit more than we saw in North Carolina and all last month, whenever that was, Florence. I've lost track.
What storm was. It's easy to do.
Yeah, so, you know, there's no question flooding will be an issue. I think this storm may be moving a little bit more quickly. And, you know, the fact that not all the river runoff goes back to the coast. I mean, this thing will get, you know, some ways inland, and some of that stuff will begin washing out to the east coast as opposed to down to the Gulf Coast. So that'll actually offload the, you know, rivers and water flow that's coming back into the Gulf side. So that'll help a little bit. I still have no doubt we'll see pretty substantial flooding as we always do. And, you know, again, it's such a geographically large storm that there'll be substantial damage of, you know, trees and power lines and roof and that kind of stuff going on over the next, you know, several days, pretty far out. So it's going to be a pretty broad area of at least tropical storm force wind impact.
Yeah, Kyle told us that the Carolinas was going to catch some of this, which is probably the last thing they need. Jamie?
Well, I was just going to say, I've got a question, Joe. You know, what's the protocol with how you you and the other task forces on that side deploy? I guess state resources are in contact with local and county resources, and they start kind of pointing you in a direction, or do you just start moving in and taking on tasks as you come upon them?
Well, I think what we will do is attempt to move ourselves close to the area. You know, part of that is while needs assessments are being done by local and state authorities, and obviously local and state and regional resources are being brought to bear, we want to be and need to be close so that, if those services are overwhelmed, we're close by to be able to respond in a timely manner. So we always, work through state emergency operations centers and that sort of stuff to let them know that we're close by and what our capabilities are. And, the southern states, especially along the coast, have always been pretty good in understanding what we can do and sort of how the system is designed to work, so that they reach out to the, you know, at the state level pretty quickly and then on to the federal level. And then usually that's, that comes to us in terms of we're aware that there is some significant flooding or damage in X and so area, and we need you guys to go check it out, take care of business. So, you know, we sort of get assigned our spot to some extent, and that may be we want you to search this area and make certain that everyone's out, or we know that there are people trapped there and we need, you know, rescues, et cetera. So we'll be prepared for whatever is asked of us, and probably be working, as we always do, in conjunction with state and local teams to help, you know, address whatever comes up. And many times we just simply are supplementing local resources, or where if those local resources are substantially overwhelmed or hindered because of storm damage and flooding, you know, to be able to function sort of independently, then we'll bring those people on board with us because they know the local area, they know the geography, they know the town, city, you know, et cetera, that that they're working in. And so they are invaluable to us to get us to where we need to be, to get to the areas that need help and need stuff done. And of course, they know the local infrastructure on who to call for what and how to get the things that we need and how to report the information that they're looking to get from us.
Semper Gumby, huh? Be flexible.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
Go where you
got to
go.
And we'll be interested in hearing what you've got to say, Joe, because I know we had mentioned there was some information we got via Dan Zahner that some of the building codes in that part of Florida are much different than they are on the southern part of Florida around Miami and the Keys. Built to withstand a lot more wind down in that area, whereas up on the Panhandle, they haven't had the stronger building codes because they haven't had to experience something. I just saw come across my news feed at 1 p.m. Central Time. The hurricane made landfall near Panama City with 155 mile an hour sustained winds. So Wow. Just almost Category 5.
Yep, right there.
Right
there.
It may bump up. Who knows?
So I'll be interested to see how the structures in the region stand up to the force of those winds coming in at that level, given the different building codes that are encountered. And it's not a part of fault or anything. It's just things are different in different places.
Sure.
Because of what you expect. And it may change those building codes in these areas given this storm. We'll have to see. But that's something to check on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I
go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm just going to say, Jamie, I think you're exactly correct. You know, they haven't experienced a major storm of this magnitude in a long time. And, you know, when those buildings were built, they were built under building codes that were, you know, 25 years old. So a lot of that is just, you know, places that have been hit hard and have tighter building codes have had all their previous buildings wiped out and, you know, have come back stronger and better. So part of that is just that was the standard of building at the time. And, you know, this storm, if it causes significant damage to them, I'm sure will result in tightening of building codes in that area as well and improvement in the future. So,
yeah, I'm sure Dan will give us an update on that after the fact. So see how they fared. So if they fell down, they'll build them bigger and stronger.
Exactly right. Build them back better.
So, Joe, next time we talk to you, maybe some of your cohorts can jump on with you, you know, when you get through the worst of this.
Yeah, so absolutely. So I don't know, you know, sort of where we'll all be located, if we'll be together much, but I certainly have mentioned to both of them that I'd like to get them together and pull them on the podcast again just so we can have a little reunion time and get everybody's perspective of things. But I think we'll just have to sort of see where the next 48 hours takes us. And I will certainly do my best to, you know, give a report out while I'm busy and also see if I can be lucky enough to be close to those guys so that we can perhaps all get together and make it a multi-party podcast.
That would be awesome. And I'll keep an eye on my texts whenever you do have a minute and we can do a quick update. So
that sounds great.
Talking to you next time. So, Jamie, I know you're going to be up to your armpits in podcasting and family stuff and so forth, but I'll try to keep a close eye on the Facebook group. I'm hoping all of our folks there will let us know that they're safe, if they're in the area, that if they're being deployed or not. I'd love to get some feedback on what's going on with our little family out there.
Yeah, and we'll definitely be making posts over the next couple of days, so stay tuned. If you have a relevant news item you find and you'd like to post it in the group, please do so. We this is a community effort, and we aren't the people that are like, we're administrating the group, but we're not gatekeepers to that extent. We want you to be able to post things that you find important and relevant. So if you're in the area or you have a relevant story you'd like to share and ask for some commentary from the rest of the group, please do so. We'd love to hear from you. And this is something we can all have a longer discussion about.
Yes, it's a really awesome group with some really high-level, talented, amazing people. So I'd love to hear more from them. So we'll see what happens. Maybe, Kyle, we can get in touch with you in another day or so, kind of after the worst of the storm passes, and see what we got left.
Definitely. Kyle, where can folks find you if they want to connect with you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social media places under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. Feel free to follow along or connect with me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Sam, how about you?
Well, all those social media places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. Like I said, I'll be keeping a close eye on our Facebook group and, of course, the disasterpodcast.com site. How about you, Jamie?
Well, folks can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations out there. So friend, follow, or otherwise catch up with me there. And do definitely connect with us over at our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, search for Disaster Podcast, and ask to join, and we'll get you in there right away. We want to have you be part of the organization that we have put together there, where you can connect with some people in various different types of disaster response fields from all over the country and the world. So we want you to be part of that community, too. You know, Sam, we got a lot going on, a lot coming up, and obviously when this episode drops later this evening, some of the aftermath will already have been played out, but we will definitely be bringing more to you as we get more updates from the field.
Yes, weather is an amazing thing, and it's always surprising us. When we think we have it figured out, we don't. So that clearly means disaster weather is not our everyday weather.